thanks so much for listening to the Salesforce Posse podcast. Today, I'm joined by a fantastic panel of Salesforce Dreaming event organizers, Louise Lockie, Kerry Townsend, Todd Halfpenny, and Jade Hawkin. We're going to be diving into the world of the Salesforce community events. We'll be talking about what makes community-led events like London's Calling so special, how they differ from Salesforce-run events, and why they're the best place to learn from real-world experts without a sales pitch in sight. We'll also reflect on the evolution of London's Calling as it gears up for its 10th anniversary. With 9 tracks of talks and over 60 sessions, it's become one of Europe's largest and most diverse Salesforce learning events. We'll have top tips for first-time attendees, and we'll even discuss the future of dreaming events and what they may look like in the future. This podcast is sponsored by Nintex, the Salesforce document generation, process intelligence, and workflow automation company. Now, I've used and recommended their DocGen tool for clients for many years. It allows me to generate documents with ease without a single line of code so that organizations can focus on what really matters. So that's enough. So without further ado, let's go. Okay, welcome London's Calling gang to the podcast.
Hello.
Hello.
Okay, so we're here to talk about Salesforce community events and the trials and tribulations of putting one on. But I think we should start right at the beginning on what is the difference between a Salesforce community-led event and a Salesforce event. And so who am I going to pick first? I think Jade, you had a really interesting view because we talked about this because you're kind of newer into the Salesforce ecosystem than all of us.
It's not hard with the rest of us.
Exactly.
Vintage.
And I remember what you said when you first walked into a Salesforce event on the World Tour. Yeah. But, so, what was your experience?
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. So I got off the DLR. This is at the XO in London. And I honestly thought I'd gone to the wrong place. I thought I'd gone to a children's theme park. I walked in and I just saw fake green grass everywhere. I then looked up and I saw people in suits taking photos with costume characters.
Big toys,
right?
Essentially.
Yeah.
Yep. And then I saw this massive frenzy going on of grown-ups trying to get these massive plushies and teddy bears and then walking around the rest of the day with these massive teddy bears in their arms. It was a shock to the system. And I have to be honest, I'm still not 100% sure I'm like on board with the costume characters. Although I have got some plushies, so I do get that.
Yeah, and you're embracing
some badges. I am embracing it slowly but surely. But I found the community event not as full on.
Ridiculous?
Yeah, ridiculous. Yeah. let's go with ridiculous. They still, you know, are fun and passionate and lovely. But yeah, no, not a bit more down to earth.
Well, we don't have the budget that London's Calling and London World Tour have very different budgets. So
yeah,
the green grass, all the plants, and paying people to wear those ridiculous suits to dance and take pictures with people is, funnily enough, not within the average community conference's budget.
I'm quite grateful.
If you could do
it with
a packet of peanuts and a beer, then yeah, we'll do it. Otherwise,
Oh my gosh, and everybody mumps in. The campsites as well. Like there was, random campfires, in the XL.
Okay, so you've got the kind of the craziness of that at the World Tour, but when it comes down to like the content and what you get out of it, like how does the content differ, Louise, in your opinion?
Well, I would say if you want to hear Salesforce selling Salesforce, then go to World Tour. If we're talking about, say, like one that picking World Tour as a regional event, because we have one in London, and obviously, for those that are just listening, I have a London Salesforce T-shirt on where the O is the cloud that I did pick up at a World Tour many moons ago. So if you want to hear Salesforce towing the corporate line and selling their products to what they hope is largely prospects, then that's what World Tour is from a content point of view. And that's fine. It's free to attend. So, you know, part of the bargain is you get sold to. If you come to a community conference, a Dreaming, or like London's Calling, which we count as a Dreaming, but we just don't use the word Dreaming, then you're going to be listening to experts in the community. So, we'll hear from people that have worked as long as in the community as long, or in the ecosystem as long as we have, and are talking about their knowledge. So what they've learned through years of building, implementing, designing Salesforce. So you'll have, CTAs, CTOs, product owners, product managers. From a community point of view, you'll have people, community leaders, MVPs coming in and talking and sharing their practical knowledge without a sales pitch in sight, because for the content, we rule that out. There's other ways to sell at London's Calling.
Yeah, and I think it's what I quite like about it is it's a, I think with the Salesforce World Tour events, you're getting all the new stuff as well, like the things that are going to be released and all the kind of
safe harbors all over the shop.
Yeah, exactly. But it is kind of like you're kind of understanding then what the vision is for the next year or so for Salesforce, which I quite like. But yeah, at the Dreaming events, it's a lot more kind of down to earth, through the trenches, the kind of real best practice stuff of
live demos live, not Figma.
This exists, but don't ever use it. Use this instead, kind of thing. And that's what I love about it, right? Is you're getting actual kind of real practical advice on kind of really maximizing your investment in Salesforce or using Salesforce in a way that you may not have thought would be a way you could use it, I suppose.
And you get to stop by afterwards and talk to the people, ask them questions. Or maybe at the end of their session, if there's not too long or a queue, but then afterwards at the, while grabbing lunch or grabbing a drink. So you've got access to those folks. Whereas, again, at a Salesforce event, the employees will obviously have other duties. They'll be assigned elsewhere afterwards. So you can ask follow-up questions either publicly or privately, which I think a lot of people value.
I was actually going to follow up on that. That's the one thing that I loved is how accessible, you see all of these MVPs in their golden jackets and you think, oh my gosh, that, you seem so far away. And yet there you do, you see them walking around these community events and they're approachable and, you can chat to them. You might even get a mentor, you're able to actually connect with these people who have carved their way through this world.
Yeah. And I think it's kind of building that network, isn't it? Of people like, oh, I'm doing marketing cloud. Oh, I've got now a contact of a guru in that marketing cloud where I can just ask a quick question and go, how do you do this?
Slide into the DMs. Really,
exactly.
Nice to chat to you at London's Calling. Now, can you help me with this problem?
Your session was amazing. Loved it.
Flattery.
Any chance I can ask this? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so it's more practical application, isn't it? So World Tour is aspirational, where we're going. And then you can show up at a Dreaming event and someone can give you a real honest answer about how they feel about aptly implementing that piece of product right now, whether they think it's ready, what they do or don't like about it, where the gaps are. You can get some really honest answers.
Mm-hmm. And I think also you get the people who've taken a product and used it in a completely different way that hasn't been kind of advertised or put out there, because everyone is, like you said, in their own trenches, right? And they're going, right, how can I solve this? And these really smart people are going off and creating all of these solutions that haven't appeared on any roadmaps or marketing slides, right? It's brilliant.
Yeah. And even just understanding the App Exchange, right? And some of the apps that you never even know existed. And it's like, that's really cool. And you do fun things. So, okay. So Todd, what do you get out of it from kind of the developer and, point of view, Dreaming event?
I mean, there is... I think we've discussed already that there's the differences between being sold kind of these aspirational ideas and forward-looking statements, what's coming up. But when you're from the community events, the content is so much around here's stuff that's actually in a customer's org or we're building this out for some project. And it's seeing how people have taken those, the tools that are available to us and the features that are out there. Plus, what the amazingness that's in people's minds and how they've put this stuff together and seeing how they've done that, I guess you're getting real takeaways, right? You're getting concrete things that other people have done that you can then use and advance on and put forward in your own ways. And that's good. I mean, that is definitely there from a developer point of view. Like, it's like having a Stack Exchange in the room with you, right? You can have these dialogues. But I imagine it's the same for all of the roles and all of the spaces that are catered for community events, right? That you're going to have these real world examples of what's going on. And like I said, these really intelligent people who are there
But Todd, when it comes to developers, here's a key question. Do we actually get them at a dreaming event, at a London's Calling, to network with people, to chat to people? You know, we know they're notoriously not very social. We've got a couple of social ones here, but you know, on the call. Yeah. But normally, so what about the networking part? Do the developers get involved, or is it just us architects and admins?
No, they do, for sure they do. I mean, it might be that, I mean, everyone is different, and some people kind of are more comfortable in handling especially larger social events in their own way, sure. Right? And that's to be understood. And I think going back to what Jade was saying about having people within the community who appear to be accessible, that can help everybody, right? So if you see someone who's looking accessible, like you can go and talk to them, then even the people who don't normally do that will do. I mean, I've definitely had conversations with people I know who, for me to look at, I would think that perhaps they're kind of the stereotypical developer who might be very introverted. But actually, when you talk to them about these events, they're like, this is brilliant. I've had so much fun here. I've gained so much information. And so it's, yeah, I think even for the, you know, the
I'm
kind
just
of...
teasing, you know, but, yeah, but yeah. I think the networking is an important part of the day. And yeah. So...
I think a lot of some people think that is it, right? It's more than the sessions, almost, is the networking and the connecting with people, right? But also, I think it's like, for me, it's like the amount of sessions that you know, these dreaming events. Like, I kind of find there's like more going on at a dreaming event than there is a world tour. There seems to be kind of less sessions, but more people attending a world tour versus... Oh, how many have we got? Like 60 sessions or something?
Yeah, well, last year we had nine different sessions going on at a time. So that was our biggest ever. Wow. And we'll be repeating that this year. So there's no way. I don't think any other Salesforce event, bar, say, Dreamforce, has close to nine different sessions to choose from at any one time.
Yeah, all recorded so you can watch it afterwards as well so you don't miss anything. Yeah. It's just choosing which one to go for, which I think is always... Yeah.
That's got to be the hardest thing. I think as an attendee to other events, going and having a look at the agenda and you're like, oh my God, I've got seven tracks here and every single one is one I want to be going to. It's but what a brilliant problem to have.
Yeah.
We spoil them and they do moan about it. People do have definitely said to me, like, well, why are these two on at the same time? I want to go to both of them. I was like, okay, that's a sign of a good conference. Yeah, get piped down.
Yeah, yeah.
And we try, like, Louis, we do try, don't we, to kind of not have all admin sessions happening on the same time.
I think we do more than try. I think we succeed. If you've got those number of rooms available, we can make sure we have something of every type and then obviously level as well. So it's why there's such a long gap from when the call for presentations closes to when we actually announce the full agenda, because that's just a massive jigsaw that needs to be worked out. And it takes a lot of time for all you folks listening wondering why. That is why. And because we don't just want to go, okay, we've got everything's into a room. We've got the right number of sessions at the right number of times. No, we don't. We go down to that level of, is there something for a beginner? Is there something for an intermediate? Is there something that, on each sort of track, for want of a more specific word? So no, we do try. There shouldn't be two sessions that are too similar, full stop, let alone at the same time.
It takes time to strike that perfect balance, doesn't it?
Something that I particularly liked about those events is that because they're so content rich. Like when I've gone to community events in different places, unlike a world tour, you don't feel under pressure to go to like the three sessions that were relevant for you. You can actually step into a session that you would never normally go to. Like, so I've gone into developer sessions that, to be honest, I had no business being in, right? Like, I'm looking around in the room and I'm like, no, not a clue. But you can, I've always found that you can take something from that. You can be inspired. Even if I don't understand everything that they're talking about, it gives me the language and an overall approach and understanding, which means I can then go and look up or read more and find something that I can either apply or gives me a greater understanding of working with a different colleague about the challenges that they might have or the language. And then that allows me to step into further different conversations. So that's another area that I found particularly inspiring, why I love, you know, community events, because it opens doors in ways that you never really even thought about before you went.
Well, the platform is so vast, right? And the ecosystem is so massive that you're never going to know about these things unless you actually do kind of like step into that room and see what's going on. I mean, I'm a huge advocate for people trying to attend events or sessions that don't necessarily correlate with their current role. I think if you do that, then you're not seeing the big picture and you're not able to take advantage of all that's around us, I think.
And it's like, I think also like the world of development and click development, and it's getting so blurred, right? The lines of where it is, that you can learn so much from either side. And also you're getting, you know, you're kind of more skilled in those kind of T-shaped careers where, you know, yeah, you've got the deep understanding of your kind of niche or whatever you're after, but you get that kind of understanding of, yeah, you might not be able to code, but you get how to debug the code or find where things are wrong. You might not be able to fix it, but, and it's kind of that kind of understanding, which I think is kind of really, really valuable. And also that personally, I like going to events because then I'm focused to learn for that day rather than trying to do a quick trail or a module or something during the week and forgetting about it. And I'm there to learn and I'm focused at doing that. And that's why I kind of like going to events.
I think you've hit the nail on the head there. I think that, if people were looking at some of these events and going, well, London's Calling, they say most content is available online afterwards. So I'll just wait and watch that in a few months' time. But will you? You won't. Because
you look at the stats and it's like, no.
I've got so many videos bookmarked that I know are going to be brilliant. And by the time I review my bookmarks, I'm like, well, that's out of date now. I should have watched that last year, but I didn't. But whereas if I go to an event, I'm there. That's my purpose. And maybe I might skip one session because I'm having a really great chat with someone that I've never met before, and they could be a great person to collaborate with, to talk to whatever. But, I'm there for the content, and I will be going to that content, and I'll be consuming, I'll be focused, I'll be taking notes, maybe asking some questions. So it is a different experience entirely to, I'll just watch back at my leisure.
I do that every year at London's Calling. Yeah. I never get a chance to sit down and listen to any of the talks. And every single year I go, right, I am going to sit and listen to all of these things.
Doesn't happen.
No, it doesn't.
No.
No. It's just that's the way life works for us all.
Yeah.
So if you were a first timer coming to a dreaming event, what is your top tips, each of you? Like maybe one or two top tips for a first timer. You thought of some? Two? Yeah? You ready? Todd, start with you.
I guess the first tip would be to try not to be overwhelmed, right, by what's going on, and stay focused. So when you're having conversations with people, try really hard to remember their names. I can't do it. I'm sure people can. But the advice to me would be go in, don't be overwhelmed, and try to be in the moment when you're having those conversations, right? Really listen to people because they're extremely valuable, and they'll be extremely valuable in the future, right? Whether they're going to be a customer of yours in the future, or a partner, or an employee, or these connections are important. So don't be overwhelmed and try to be engaged. I would take a notebook, right? Your brain's going to be full capacity, or on your phone, but make notes about what's going on, because by the end of the day, after you've had a party and a dance, and you wake up next morning, you go, oh man, what was, there was somebody I spoke to, or there was this thing that came up, and my memory is shot to pieces. So, yeah, I think that's it.
I like to take photos of people's badges or the slides, beginning slides of a talk or stuff, just to remind me that was the guy that talked about that. So I can reach out again. Okay, so Kerry, how about you?
One of the ones I think I've already given away, which is potentially go into a session that you wouldn't normally.
Yeah, you don't.
Something very different, or just to expand your mind. But again, I would say very similar things about keeping the connection. So I try to, if those people share their social handles, I try to connect to them straight away. I take pictures of the beginning slide and maybe some other slides, not because I'm going to be reviewing their slides. You can get that content in other ways, but it reminds you of the order of the day. It gives you a memory that you pass through, so that when everything starts to blend into one a little bit, you can go back and pick those up.
Yeah, I'm a bit of a visual learner, so yeah, those cues of those images of the slides take me back to the session, so that you kind of remember what kind of's happened. So how about you, Jade?
I would say go. You know, when you're sat there first thing in the morning and, you know, you're terrified and go, do I have a place in this big world? You know, and you have all of those thoughts and fears going around in your head. Just do it anyway. Just go. And I would say the second part is to actually just go with the flow. Go where, you know, the conversations take you. Go where breakfast is, and, you know, go to that, into that room that you don't actually know what's going on, because you never know who you're going to sit next to. You never know who you're going to speak to. So yeah, just do it anyway and go with the flow.
Cool. Louise?
On a similar vein, I would say that people will hold back because they think everyone else knows each other, I don't know anyone. And I guarantee that's not the case. Yes, for sure, there's people that know each other because, you know, they've met at these events, they've been coming for years, but they all started off not knowing anyone. So go along and know you've got something in common. When you're sat in a session, or you're sat in the queue to get breakfast, lunch, etc., ask, you know, hi, you know, what do you do in the Salesforce world? Because you know you've got an in, you know you've got something in common. That's how connections are made. Don't be afraid. Don't think, oh, I'm not going to interrupt those people. Interrupt them. They'll, you know, unless it's one of us that have got an earpiece in that are running from room to room and we're looking weirdly because we're staring at the ceiling because we're listening to someone talking in our ear. But everyone else, totally go and talk to. You're not there for the first time. And also in the same vein, then do stay for the entertainment and the after party as well. Don't have to stay for long. It's entirely up to you whether you fancy a canapé, a glass of Coca-Cola or a glass of Prosecco, whatever you fancy, do, because people are then unwinding. They're not about to go off to a session, and you might have some great chats at that point. Then go in the photo booth with someone. You know, you could really make, I've seen some friendships and connections really be consolidated and started and consolidated over the course of a day at London's Calling and other dreaming events.
Have a dance with the amazing band.
Yes.
Yeah, I think mine's a bit more practical tip, I suppose, because you've kind of said a lot of them now. And that is just kind of before you get to the event, you know, use the app that comes as part of the, you know, to kind of look at all those sessions, plan your day and decide what you're going to see. But also don't kind of fill up your entire day. You know that you're going to have time to kind of chill, you know, network or chat or visit the sponsors or whatever it may be, or have, you know, fun on the crazy party machines or whatever happens this year for our 10th anniversary, which is all very exciting. So I think this kind of takes us on to London's Calling 2025 10th anniversary edition. And what are we going to be seeing at the event? Or are we just going to keep it quiet?
Faces, for sure. I would very much like to know what's going to be happening this year.
Well, we should probably start planning it soon, right?
Yeah, maybe.
Our weekly meetings, you know, have just been more social.
I think this is it. Like, okay, why do we do it, right? Because there's some ideas we've got bashing around that we kind of have a chat with each week to try and see what we're going to do, kind of that's going to be fun and entertaining, because we always want to try and push, you know, the boundary a little bit more each year, right? But why do we all do it? Because essentially it's community events. We're all kind of doing it for free, right? So why do you do it, Louise?
Louise
goes to a lot of the dreaming events, I have to say, right? Yeah. She is the dreaming event queen, I think, of all dreaming events.
I might be. I have added it to my bio on slides now when I'm presenting around the world that I'm a dreaming addict, because, I can't really deny it.
I love that.
But that's it. I'm attending a dreaming's biggest fan. I'm sure there'll be people competing with me for that. I'm definitely. But when it comes to London's Calling, I mean, every year, I'm sure I'm not alone. I know I'm not alone. Sod that. That's too much work. That's too much stress. That's too much time. But on the day, seeing the amazing content, seeing people gushing about the time they've had, seeing people eat balloons popping in their mouths at the end of the day, or having a chocolate bust of themselves made, having fun with strangers in the photo booth. But in their bag, they've got a notepad full of notes. And that just warms the heart and just goes, okay, all right, that 9 months of graft and lost earnings, because, that's it. Our time is money, all of that. So, yeah, I do it because it means so much to so many people, and that makes it worth it.
Yeah, definitely. I'm choked up now. Right, okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same thing, but I've got so much value in terms of learning. It's expanded. And unfortunately, I'm not able to travel as much, but I've also traveled to a lot of dreamings, and I absolutely love going to the first one in a region, because it's small, it's really authentic. Like, the people that are going there are really sort of committed, and the connections that you make at those are really great. And I've made worldwide connections. I have a global set of friends that I get in touch with. I mean, I've seen people in Australia. I've gone to Hawaii to connect with the people that I've met on that route. And they're genuine, nice people that, otherwise I wouldn't have had the opportunity to have in my life. So it's, as well as the learning and how it's, helped my career to be able to expand and network, meet the group of people that I'm on this podcast with.
I think it's more than
just an event.
Yeah. And I think we haven't really talked about where the events are, right? These dreaming events. Louis probably got a better idea than most of us.
Why don't we just discuss where you've been for the last few weeks, each week?
Community conference of them all,
What's my favourite? London's Calling.
That's good. Stay on message.
Right answer.
Is that the largest Salesforce community event in Europe?
Exactly.
In the world.
That little one. I think we'll see how we get on this year, but I think we're looking to breaking all the records, aren't we? Yeah. No, I mean, and all joking aside, one thing I love about dreaming events is that if they're done well, then they bring something different, and they bring some of their local culture. And so, I love that. I love the different spaces they can be in, particularly, and apologies, America, but I think the European events do this really well. Or let's say EMEA events do this really well, that they just make it a little bit different. They don't follow, I love all events. I've been to most of the American ones, but I do think the European ones mix it up a little bit in a way that I find, just adds so much to the event. We tend to use different spaces. Like, we've got an amazing space in London that's quite unique. So I see that. So I do think standing out from the crowd, doing something different, is so important. Just like Francis, you said earlier, that we try to break the barrier and do something different each year. And I think we're known for doing that, and people will keep coming back to London's Calling because what will happen this year?
Ooh.
I do find there is a stark difference for me personally between, you know, world tour and community events, but more so ours, is that I just feel there's more heart and soul. I do find world tour can be a bit clinical, a bit corporate, a bit, you know,
well, they
straight
are,
down
right,
the
they
line.
Are. These it corporate events,
corporate
event.
Yeah,
it is a corporate event, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Whereas, yeah, I, and you know, just going back to why do we do it, when I've had, you know, less than 4 hours sleep after 48 hours, I do
trying
question
to get everything in. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. I do question why am I still doing it, but I love the people, and like Louise is saying, I love the connections, the fact that people really do genuinely get so much from it. And, you know, part of it is like childbirth. I go through the pain. I remember it for a few days and then I conveniently forget about it just in time for us to just start having general chats.
Yeah.
You know, and then we start working towards the next one. So, yeah. But no, I love it.
Just
Todd like, totally understands that reference.
I mean, I was thinking, I'm not sure my wife said it was just a few days of following birth, that she was contemplating never having them again. But
I think we is definitely post London's calling becomes a very kind of what's the word requiring therapy as a group session, right?
Mildly touchy. Like let's not communicate with each other for at least a few weeks.
A lot of let's have some time off, please. Yeah. I love you all, but
I'll never want to see another Slack notification again.
Okay, so how has it evolved over the years? Because what we started 10 years ago, right? It was, you know, Louise, you were kind of, because we were talked about it basically out in San Francisco, wasn't it?
I was there at the conception.
You were there at the conception. You just didn't do
I wouldn't
it
announce
until
that
a couple of years ago.
There was
right?
alcohol involved. You might be surprised.
But yeah, so it was Kerry, myself, you were there, Louise, although you didn't start initially. Jodie Wagner and Simon Goodyear, right?
And Will Coleman was also
Will. Yeah, yeah Will.
Well, he was the one pushing. Yeah. He was on going do it
without
he couldn't do it because he
without
Will.
And he was the one that was paying for the champagne and the alcohol for that particular night, as I remember. Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's what greased it. Yeah,
yeah.
And we did.
He knew the way to our hearts.
And I do remember the napkin. Yeah, that we had. I've got a photo of it somewhere still. Of, you know, it being a 2-day event. Fly me, we were naive back then. And, you know, and how we're going to structure it all. And then the kind of reality you set on actually, how do you get a venue? Or you need to put a deposit down for a venue, but
you
don't have any
it,
money.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then it's like, well, you need to get sponsors. But to get sponsors, you need to have a venue and have a date, right? But you can't do that until you've got money. This kind of vicious circle of
chicken
craziness. But then we kind of got out of that. And I think it's grown and grown and grown over the years, right? We kind of added like 100 people, attendees, roughly every year to now, what is it, 900 people stuffed into the brewery. I don't know.
Don't worry, there's some breathing room.
I was gonna say, it only feels like they're stuffed in the after party. Generally,
yeah,
they're all spread out.
It does hold 1,200, doesn't it? So we're not breaking any fire rules out yet.
Although 10th anniversary, we might be spreading people out a little bit more with more fun and activities. But we'll see. Fingers crossed. But where do you see community events evolving and going to? Are we going to just carry on continuing? Is it going to be a bit more of a blur between Salesforce events and community events, or any ideas? I'll kind of open that up to everyone who wants to jump in.
Where's it going to go?
Oh, I think probably more diversification. I think that's what we've seen as a trend in terms of regions, communities, bringing them together. And I think that there is a need now for some uniqueness or some locality around it to keep that going, which again is something that I love about all of those. I mean, I'm not making it abroad at the moment, but I'm seeing them all popping up all over the world, and I'm like, yes, I'd like to go to that. Like, I'd like to visit that venue, see those people, experience that culture. So I think potentially that will still need to say. I don't think it's going to converge with more corporate events. I feel there's enough of those for businesses to stand up.
And also the kind of the ROI of the event is different, isn't it? It's kind of like, you know, the Salesforce events are there for marketing and sales to engage with new functionality and apps and features, right? Whereas the community events are very much, you know, the foundations of Salesforce best practice. It's learning. It's that, you know, getting yourself out of a hole if you find yourself in by knowing who to call, you know, it's that kind of thing, right? Which I think, yeah, they're going to continue. But I kind of, do you think it's going to, because London's Calling, we have 9 tracks. We cater to this very diverse community. The platform is only getting bigger. So do you see it separating into several days for different types of parts of the platform, the near core platforms, the on core platform? Or do you see it just carrying on and just getting more sessions and more tracks?
I'm not sure if either of those things can happen. I mean, the elephant in the room is always money, isn't it? And you know, that we can talk about what the demand might be and how many tickets we could possibly sell if we had the capacity and the space and the scope to cross into other technical areas. But I think money is always going to be a challenge, particularly at the MOF. I think everyone's, you know, so many people have seen the pinch, feeling the pinch rather. I mean, Tableau did do their own community event last year, their first ever one. And so we might see sort of the different Salesforce spaces, such as Tableau, Slack, MuleSoft, maybe more community folks in their areas might do things in Europe and London. And so there'll be some crossover with that. I don't know about the rest of you, but I get asked by people, particularly people traveling quite a long way to come over, are you going to make it a 2-day event? And we know that, you know, we could more work obviously, but we could fill an agenda of 2 days. But the challenge is that, do people have the capacity to attend sessions for 2 days? I've been to many 2-day events and it is absolutely exhausting mentally and physically. And you can't pay that attention, the level of attention you do. Mm. And of course, and being boring and practical, you know, our costs would pretty much double because you know, the venue still would not give it to us for free. Every cup of tea, every sandwich, every nice bowl
of
food
through the door.
That costs money. So it would literally, and if we, I know, you know, let's face it, if we went to our sponsors and said the price is double next year, but you're there for 2 days. I don't think the ROI on that is there.
Your ticket price, right, or more if you wanted?
I think we'd end up with people going, okay, that's psychologically too much time out of work and too much money. So I personally think expanding days is not the right fit for us. I mean, obviously, never say never. But then how do we expand? I don't know. I don't think just because... there's
but do
a
we need to, right?
To, exactly. That's I think that's key.
I thought you were just going to mention a December edition of London's Calling or something. Then
after you, Todd.
Twice a
year.
You can do that.
Leading that one out. What, around Christmas? And you're just going to, maybe you can just spend your birthday time just organising that bad boy.
I think that's a unanimous... you know, on your own, Todd.
But I think also...
hand up for it. Let me just be clear.
I think you just did, Todd. Let us know how it goes.
Everybody saw it. I think, also, we purposely try and keep the ticket price as low as we possibly can, right? And, you know, you get for it, like, first lunch, after show food, then you get the T-shirt, then you get, obviously, all the content and everything else. The app, recordings, you know, and I think, you know, essentially we basically try and break even the whole event, right? And even though the kind of ticket price is kind of, you lose out a little bit, but it's not, you know, too bad. But I think, yeah, the value, if I went to another tech event for the same content, you know, it's double, if not more, for the price of the ticket, right? Even just to get in.
I mean, it's less than £10 an hour, like the, what we're charging people. Like it's
exactly.
So at the moment, the ticket price is £100 plus VAT, which obviously, if the business is paying for it, it's £100. If you're paying for it personally, you don't reclaim VAT, then it's £120. People say to me sometimes, "Oh, is there a discount?" I'm like, no, we're making a loss. This is as cheap as it gets. It's only going to go up.
Yeah, exactly. So
I think that's another key difference with our event, or you know, dreaming events, is that we are, you know, we're very aware that a lot of the attendees are people who just want to increase their knowledge, so they're paying personally. You know, that it's not necessarily companies buying their ticket all the time. So yeah.
Very true.
Whether they're employed or not, sometimes people just don't have, companies say no. So they're willing to invest in themselves, which I applaud them for.
Yeah.
Which I think is happening more and more right now. So the more we can support that, the better, right? And help each other.
Yeah. So Francis, one of the ways that you mentioned expanding might be to go into more sort of vertical tracks on roles. And I can see why you could go down that route. But if we wanted to do that in a London's Calling, then we'd have to make a choice. And I've always been a strong advocate of broadening that out. And I definitely was the one banging on about having a marketing track and bringing the marketing folk into our event. And if it, I can see that there is a place for events which do focus on one particular role. But again, I think that misses out on the opportunity to step into a different conversation, to expand your network beyond your discipline and your function. And that's where the growth and the expansion really comes from. And it's those different ways of thinking, because, you know, sort of diversity in thinking patterns is also what expands what we're doing and what we understand. It isn't just like, if you stay amongst yourselves in your silo, I mean, to make a data analogy,
co-chamber,
like we're currently in a situation where all organizations are trying to bring their data out of those individual silos so that people don't have just one narrow view. So I'd be the maybe the only one in the room, I don't think so, in with working with you.
I tried a couple of years ago. Yeah, and I even, a couple of years ago, when we were still at the old venue, trying to get other content in that wasn't even Salesforce, right? So like AWS content that has a link to Salesforce and is important as part of that kind of architectural scope, but the ways of integrating, you know, AWS to Salesforce and what's in that AWS, you know, toolkit, right? And getting to people to kind of think a bit wider on the capabilities that are out there. But yeah, kind of thinking, now you're saying that, Kerry, it's almost like, do we kind of get rid of what roles these sessions are all for, you know, developers, architects, you know, admins, and actually just say, well, you've got to read the session contents to figure out if it's relevant to you. And maybe you go to a session and it is more of an admin or a developer session that you weren't expecting, but you actually come out with something different that you weren't expecting. Or not.
I don't think we should announce that on the podcast. I think that's actually quite a good idea.
Or maybe we don't even have an agenda, right? It's all blind. You just have closed doors and people just choose a room and then you're in for the day, right?
Well, that's the lightning talk approach, right? Of where you just walk with your feet. You know, there's, you're in a big room, you've got, you know, six people talking on a box. And then you just, if you're not liking what you're hearing, you just move to somebody else in the room, right? And it's that kind of concept of, which,
that's one thing I have actually quite, I did like at World Tour, was the ability to actually be sat somewhere with your headset and just change the colour of your headset. And you
to listen
quickly,
to another session. Yeah,
you could quickly dive into other sessions, see their slides from where you were sitting and then go,
without
oh,
moving.
Actually, no, I'm going to go over there now.
Yeah, maybe we should do something like that. Well, you could kind of do that anyway, right? Because all the videos, all the sessions are streaming online anyway. So in theory, you could do that at London's Calling as well. Just get some headphones, pop it into your phone, away you go, right? But I think the speakers might get a little bit annoyed.
I was going to say, if I can do like this symbol, like to people listening, I'm like doing cut, cut, cut. That's similar to Francis now. Like, you can see stop spitballing.
How our,
stop thinking.
You can see how our weekly meetings go now.
Yeah, exactly.
You can see why these grey hairs appear now.
So what do you think is the biggest challenge running these community events?
I was just going to jump back. Can I just jump back to that question? I think on a serious note, the evolution of events, I think, will come around the... Or there's definitely scope for people evolving their sessions, right? So as a presenter, taking your session and doing something that's not just a fairly... I mean, I know people are trying to stay away from corporate slides with lots of words and all this. And generally, lots of speakers are really good at this. But I wonder if there's space for people to put on different sessions, right, that are slightly more creative or slightly more engaging or a bit off the wall. I think there's...
Are you
there's
talking about yourself having yourself on video as you did in French Touch Dream Ring? So
that
for
okay,
anyone that
it?
I didn't... Todd actually had talked back and forth to a video recording of himself wearing a beret
awesome.
While in Paris. So I think this is the kind of creativity he's thinking of.
I mean, I've...
No, but I think also, I think he's on the right track because, like, you know...
Was fun.
We've kind of seen, like, the session's coming. We do a blind review, right? So nobody knows who's submitted it. Well, Louise might do, but, you know, we don't.
Well, I think some of us recognise some things, but we try and, like, let's read it.
But, you know, reviewing them, you're like, oh, that's come straight out of ChatGPT, you know? And it's kind of like, well, actually, if you're all looking in the same... If they're all looking the same, then you're not really... putting your head against above the parapet and going, well, actually, my talk is unique and different, and this is why. So maybe that is now the way the world's going, where actually I'm going to do this, this, and this in my session, that actually it's not just the content, it's the style of my presentation that's going to actually rise it above the noise of everybody else so that you do actually get picked and your session gets picked for the day.
And you can tell it in reviews afterwards, right? When you talk to people and they're like, this session, like, I've been to 8 good sessions today, but this one was outstanding. Like, there were ones that distinguished themselves slightly, and a lot of that isn't necessarily about the content as such, but the way it's delivered, the way it's been structured, it's told through a story or a game or something that's extremely relatable or not relatable at all. I think those things really do make sessions stand out.
And I think it's also those sessions where they have these core concepts that they want to deliver, and it's intertwined through the whole session. So when you come out, you just understand those or three core concepts that they wanted to get over versus the sessions that try and pack in everything. And you come at the end and you're like, yeah, okay, that was good, but what did I take away from it?
It was like Louise was saying earlier, as human beings, we don't actually have the capacity to match, you know, or the capability to match the amount of information that's coming your way in such a short space of time. So, yeah, I can't believe I'm saying this, Francis, but there was a talk that you did, and I can't remember if it was last year or the year before, where I took it on board, and it was because you made it accessible to someone like me, you know, in your area. That's not where I necessarily align myself with, you know, architecture or developer or anything. But you did something with AI and, you know, a town, and you just basically made it so I actually understood it. That's the only time. I can't believe it's on record
I'm ever going to... Right? I've got to write that down. Yeah. Jane said that I was amazing.
Let's edit it.
Marker.
And actually, Todd, in reality, being honest, I actually want to see that talk that Louise has just said that you did. I'm intrigued to see
and
how
he
it worked.
And he did one in Czech Dreaming last year as well, where he was recording himself live at the time, and there was all, like, he was then showing himself being recorded on, it, you know, he...
Brilliant.
Like, I'm just, you know, just like you were very nice to Francis then, I'll be very nice to Todd, is that he is definitely someone who I've seen breaking those boundaries of what a presentation is. And I think it is a fine line, because I've also seen people trying to do that and then the session just becomes too fun but not educational. And we can have fun in the after party. We can we want to balance the fun with learning during the actual session. So we did have two people dressed up last year delivering talk on flow, and they brought in costumes.
It's good. I mean, and there is the feedback on the sessions that can happen, and that's why I think for speakers out there who are wanting to get into speaking at community conferences, to deliver them at local community events, and then have that feedback loop and say, oh, do you know what, that was a bit too much fun, or I lost a train of thought here. So definitely kind of get out there and get involved. I mean, I'm all for trying new things. But yeah, you try it out and see what works.
Yeah, and it's a kind of forgiving environment, right? You know, it's not, you know, it's not like it's a presentation at work or anything like that. I kind of feel it's a lot more, if it doesn't go quite as where you planned. Like, I think last year I was, an hour's sleep doing a talk session, right? And it was
Francis, that's getting shorter and shorter and shorter every time you retell the story.
But you're right, though. You're not pitching to a board of people. Like, you're not there trying to impress people. You're trying to impress on them something, right? And they want, the people in the room want to take something
out of it. Want you to be successful.
They want you to do well. So it's
I'm going to like caveat this slightly with, I would say that a lot of what you've just said there fits to user groups.
Yeah, yeah.
I like to believe, and I do believe so, that London's Calling is and other dreamings have to be a step above that, because people are taking a day out of work. They are paying. So I do like, managing the content. I do make sure people give me their slides ahead of time so I can make sure that they're not last minute rushing, other than Francis. So if you are thinking about coming to London's Calling or going to other dreaming events, I'd say that you can and should expect professional speakers who have spent time putting together something that will meet what we've just been talking about. Easy to digest. It's skillfully delivered, not someone bumbling through something for the first time.
I might have misspoke. I was saying if you can for speakers to go to local events and try the talks out there, and that's where you get the feedback. But not for the point about groups. The audience. The people in the audience at a community conference are wanting you to do well. That's kind of for sure. And they're a nice audience.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, we don't accept any kind of bad form at London's Calling. The heckling or anything like that would not be allowed.
It really happens, right? It doesn't really happen. I think this is why.
Event.
Yeah. Not really had, although, there's been some odd things happening over the years, but, it's all.
Unfortunately. Always. Will people?
Yeah. Are we going to be having some big confessional on the 10th anniversary?
Did you know on the 3rd? The first event, we actually, all that
Here's
food was actually made
Todd
by my mum. No. Cool. Well, I think that is, anybody got anything else to say about community events? I think we've gone through the life and soul of community events. They're all over the world, like Spain, India, all over the US, France, blimey, where
Ireland
else? Portugal,
coming up,
Ireland
coming up.
Yeah. Definitely look out. And if you are interested in creating your own community event, honestly, kind of reach out and ask. There is a whole community that is there to support you setting up your community event as well. We've all done it. We've all gone through the pains and tribulations of getting sponsors and not, and how you do get that money initially to kind of support your event. So, kind of reach out to us. But also, just come along and experience a community event for yourself and take the plunge and see what it's going to be, what it's like.
And if it's London's Calling, do it soon.
London's Calling. So we got, but it is on June the 6th. Friday the 6th of June. So definitely come along to that. But thank you, panel, London's Calling panel. And thanks for being on the podcast.
Thanks for having
me.
Thank you.
Hope to see you soon.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.